There's a general election here in the UK, and on World Business Report, we're running extended interviews with senior figures from six of the main parties. The Scottish National Party has just published its manifesto and promised to represent the interests of voters across the UK if the party wins influence at Westminster. Last year in a referendum, Scots narrowly voted against independence from the United Kingdom, but recent polls have suggested that support is growing so strongly for the SNP that it could be the UK's third largest party in this election. Well, the BBC's Dominic Laurie caught up with Stuart Hosey, deputy leader of the SNP. Many voters blame Europe's free movement of labour for high costs of immigration into the UK. So Dominic asked Mr. Hosey first why the SNP is so supportive of a dysfunctional European Union where unemployment remains so high.
Well, I wouldn't describe it as dysfunctional. I would certainly describe it as diverse, although it's absolutely true some countries are certainly having their economic difficulties. But I think the key facts here are that in terms of Scotland, almost half, 46% of our exports go to the EU. Of the foreign-owned firms in Scotland, almost half are owned by companies who are in the EU. So we want to stay in, we want to keep trading. We think the free movement of people, capital, goods is a good thing. It's good for trade, it's good for growth, it's good socially.
But there are many people in the UK, across the UK, who think the UK is simply too full. It has too many people. There are too many immigrants in the UK. What do you think about that?
Well, I actually disagree with that. Looking at the case in Scotland specifically, I think we've around 370,000 non-Scots living here. And by and large, they contribute massively. I understand that more than half of the migrants in Scotland over 16 are educated to degree level or above. Now, we need these people in Scotland. We need those sorts of migrants throughout the UK. And I think some of the stuff, it's driven by the kind of base prejudices of people like UKIP. Migration has been a net positive to Scotland, and in my view, a net positive to the UK. Now, if the argument is in some places there's a shortage of housing, there's pressure on education or health, then we need to tackle the shortage of housing, the shortage of doctors and the shortage of school places, not to demonise people because of where they come from.
The UKIP argument, though, is that this is imposing a huge cost onto the UK. It may well be that Scotland perhaps does need jobs, but there are other places in the UK that are very crowded, where the housing stock is running out. It would involve building all over the Greenbelt just to house the immigrants that are coming in, and UKIP says taking native jobs. That is a truth in a lot of the UK, isn't it?
No, it's not. And I have to say, I think the UKIP language of taking native jobs is quite offensive. I think the key thing here is if there is pressure on public services, on housing, then it's those issues that need to be addressed. But when one considers the net positive of immigration, the fact that the majority of people who come here are educated to a very high degree, that the draw on benefits and other services is actually lower than many of the indigenous population, I think it's completely wrong, the UKIP argument.
But even though there are 500,000 extra people coming in, GDP per head is still not where it was before the financial crisis. The fact is that all these extra bodies in the UK have had a cost to each individual's wealth.
Well, I think the GDP per head argument's an interesting one. It's probably got more to do with the fact that the current UK government actually stifled recovery in the first 3 years of the last parliament. I mean, the economic benefit of skilled people coming into work, taking the jobs that other people won't do, bringing skills with them is incredibly important, and not least in terms of our university sector. And when you think at the moment how difficult it is for skilled graduates to be able to stay in the UK, we actually need more of these people to boost the economy rather than throwing up the shutters and pandering to base prejudice.
But what happens if you're an £8 an hour carpenter that now can't get a job because he's been replaced by a £7 an hour one?
Well, I think the key thing is what I said earlier, that more than half of those who come into the UK do so educated to degree level or above. I think we need to look at this in the whole. There's a lot of nonsense spoken by people who simply want to slam up the shutters in any circumstance, and I think that's wrong. There's also a great deal of hypocrisy about this. You think about the hundreds of thousands, even millions of people from the UK who live in France and Spain and Italy, who work and live in countries throughout the EU and countries throughout the world. This cuts both ways. People who leave the UK contribute to the economies of other countries, and people who come into the UK contribute massively to the economy here.
The UK could leave the EU in the next parliament, or at least a vote to that effect could happen. You would be powerless to stop that, wouldn't you? How does that make you feel?
Well, there would have to be a referendum. We've said we would oppose an in-out referendum, and if there was one, we would campaign to stay in. Now, in terms of the powerlessness, what the First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, has suggested is there needs to be a kind of double lock. Every part of the UK would have to vote to leave in order for the UK as a whole to leave. Because, of course, leaving the EU would be a massive constitutional change. And our judgment is it would be absolutely wrong for Scotland, or indeed any other part of the UK, to be dragged out of the EU against its wishes.
Do you think that would be sufficient trigger for another referendum, an immediate referendum for Scotland staying or not staying within the UK?
Well, certainly some of our political opponents have said it would be, and I think because it would change the constitutional framework that was part of the No campaign last year. I think if that was to happen, it would be a very, very strong trigger indeed for another independence referendum, yes.
If you were to be an independent nation within the EU and separated from the UK, which is your dream scenario, wouldn't you have to take just as brutal diktats from Berlin and Frankfurt, just in the way that you do from London? It would just be a different person giving you orders, just in a different language.
No, because remember, the European Union, things are taken on a kind of qualified majority basis, mainly. Some areas is still a national veto. But you're part of the club with the voting rights that the nation brings to the table.
You'd be a pretty small member, wouldn't you? You'd be one of the smaller countries. And Italy, Spain, France, Germany, they'd have much more clout than you.
Well, these are bigger countries, there's no question about that. But at the moment, Scotland doesn't have a commissioner. At the moment, Scotland only has 6 MEPs. A country of our size would have a commissioner. A country of our size would have double the number of MEPs. In essence, we'd have a seat at the top table in a way that we simply do not at the moment. But of course, this election, 2015, isn't about independence. This is about holding Westminster to account. And although the EU debate is part of it, we're not seeking a mandate for another independence referendum at this election.
If the UK doesn't vote in a referendum to leave Europe, to leave the EU in the next few years, and perhaps then, in your view, a referendum isn't triggered within the UK, is that it then settled for a generation, for 25 years? Have you accepted that that's gone?
Well, we have absolutely come to terms with the referendum result last year. Absolutely come to terms with that. And we can't be clearer that this election is not a rerun of the referendum. We are not seeking a mandate for independence. That can only come about if the Scottish people decide they want one. And I think essentially what's important here is if Westminster delivers on the promises the Scottish people believe they were made for maximum devolution, that's one thing. But if they backtrack, if they fail to deliver in the way the public think they were promised, if enough of those who voted no start saying, hold on, I've been sold a pup, and start saying, we want another mandate, then I think any Scottish party, any Scottish government of any persuasion would, of course, have to listen incredibly carefully to that.
You believe in a slightly higher proportion of state spending than perhaps is the case for the economic consensus in the rest of the UK. That is founded, by and large, although not totally, on a price of oil that is much, much higher than it is at the moment. How have you redone your sums?
Well, first of all, I mean, we're not wanting to spend. What we've proposed in this election is a very modest 0.5% real terms increase in public expenditure. Now, that still sees the deficit fall, it still sees debt fall as a share of GDP, but essentially it ends austerity and it stops the squeeze on ordinary people. And that end to austerity is incredibly popular, not just in Scotland, but among many, many people in England as well. And as for the kind of price of oil in relation to Scotland and what happens next, the Scottish economy is as productive as the UK economy without oil. That has remained unchanged. Now, of course, any government has to redo its sums in light of circumstances, but we're absolutely convinced that with the powers in Scotland, full fiscal autonomy, we would be able to rebalance and grow the economy in a way that hasn't happened while we have our economy fundamentally managed from London.
In terms of Scotland becoming a green economy, you have potentially a huge natural resource around your coastlines in terms of tidal energy and wind power and so on. However, the fact remains that all that potential resource is in the wrong place, isn't it? You'd have to transport it elsewhere to the large population centres of the south of England. That would create quite a lot of environmental damage, wouldn't it?
No, and I think it's wrong to say that the wind is blowing in the wrong place. The wind is blowing off the northwest coast, that's absolutely true. And we want to connect that to the grid. The real issue here is actually connectivity charges. I mean, the idea that there's a charge to connect to the grid to harness green energy, but there would be a subsidy in the south of England for a nuclear power station or a gas or coal power station is frankly preposterous. And if you look at what is actually happening in terms of green energy, we're exporting a quite spectacular amount of our energy, and I think Scotland's green energy alone amounts to almost a third of the entire UK generating capacity. So the rest of the UK needs our green energy. The real thing we need to do here is fix the connectivity regime into the national grid.
You seem to have a vision of a country that has a large state, an expensive state. Do you think that that is something that is applicable in the modern age, in the 21st century, in austerity Europe? You're swimming against the tide, aren't you?
Well, can I say, we've never argued for a large state. We're a social democratic party. We want to see an absolutely mixed economy with the growing, thriving public private sector. Partly we need that in order to fund the public services we all depend upon. But what we're also saying is that if we can squeeze inequality out of the system, it actually provides the basis for the economy to grow even more strongly. That's the clear evidence from the OECD. So I don't think we are swimming against the tide in that regard. And when you consider, that we're talking about a modest 0.5% increase in public expenditure, but in a way which is fiscally responsible, which sees the deficit fall and the debt fall, I think it would be absolutely wrong to characterise that as a large state or spending out of control or the language our political opponents use. I think this is extremely sensible indeed, growing the economy and lifting the squeeze on ordinary people.
For more interviews and analysis of global business, search for BBC World Business Report for our daily half-hour podcast.